Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Jackie Cation here. You're listening to The Dork Forest. You know the websites, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com, if you like a determiner. JackieCation.com has everything. Both of my podcasts, all of the stand-up stuff, the new album, links to YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all the things. But so, I think, does dorkforest.com, where you can look at old videos of different shows. Anyway, if you want to support the show, tell people about the show, review it on iTunes, thumbs it up on Pandora or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, I appreciate that. You can donate. You can donate monthly. PayPal lets you do that. You can also do my Venmo if you like. It's at Jackie Cation absolutely everywhere. And my email address is jackie@jackiecation.com. And that's what the PayPal is. The PayPal link is on jackiecation.com and dorkforest.com. And go to any of them. Thanks for listening. There's merch. There's stand-up. There's tour guide. You know, you can find out where I'm touring. This is getting long. So let's get into the show. Hey, Jackie Cation here. Here's a scoop, you guys. I'm in my garage. It's 99 degrees outside. Pete Malay, longtime listener, longtime fan. His wife, was that your wife? I probably should have asked.
That what?
That's your wife who just talked flowers because it's spring. And she has a new flower podcast she's going to do. And you have a podcast. And you're like, I wouldn't mind doing the Dork Forest. And I'm like, oh my gosh, attainable goal, my friend. So what is your podcast?
My podcast is called Let's See What's Out There. It is ostensibly a Star Trek podcast, but we cover all nerd media.
Oh, nerd media. Let's See What's Out There. It's a great name. And is it at Let's See What's Out There on Twitter and all that? Or is
it's at LSWOTcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
It's an acronym, you guys. Why wouldn't it be? It's the Dork Forest. Yeah. Let's make it complicated. Let's see what's out there. Acronym, cast, Twitter, yeah. Instagram, all the things. Well played. But now this is where we were talking and you were like, I like essentially the redheaded stepchild of the Star Trek franchise. And I was a redheaded stepchild, weirdly enough. And but I was it turns out I was liked as well. But you liked Enterprise, which then became Star Trek Enterprise, which was then canceled after year four.
Yeah.
Season four. So that is a very, very narrow field of focus. I tried to watch it. It didn't take for me. And I love Scott Bakula. His name rhymes with Butt Crackula. Ooh. I mean, there's absolutely no reason not to enjoy Scott Bakula. I loved Quantum Leap. So talk to me about Enterprise.
So I think pound for pound, up until New Trek, which is like the stuff that came in the last 5 years, I'll say. Pound for pound, Star Trek Enterprise is the best Roddenberry Star Trek out there. And I know that I'm splitting hairs there, right?
Okay.
And I want to say that Star Trek is a property that is all about infinite diversity and infinite combinations. Even if Gene Roddenberry came up with that thing to sell merch, but that's what it's about. And so, like, I know that there's a lot of people who like a lot of different things, and I don't want to be mean to anything. But,
no. And you get to love Enterprise as much as anybody else loves Next Trek or Discovery or hates all of it, because but the Dork Forest is about how much you like something, and you genuinely liked Enterprise. And Roddenberry. So do you think it's the most like original Trek? Is that what you mean by that?
No, so that's great. So what do I mean by Roddenberry Star Trek? I guess Roddenberry Star Trek in my mind is Star Trek that is about humanity overcoming its baser instincts to become and transcend something better, right? For the purpose of bettering the universe.
Okay.
And to be honest, I think that the original series often kind of failed in that because it had to abide by 1960s standards and mores. And so it got a little like hairy in there sometimes, right?
Right.
Like there's that classic TOS episode where Kirk is like railing against religious oppression. And then he goes, we don't need many gods. We're fine with just our one. And it was like, oh, you were so close. You were so close to making the right point. But, you know, it's like, yeah, but they had to say that because of, you know, what they right. would put on television in the 60s.
Right. They're trying to advertise. And you're like, don't sell a pantheon. Anyway, right. It's hard to.
Yeah. And so I think that Enterprise was really able to show us that sort of uplift of the human spirit and the human condition. I will say that I did not watch it when it was out, which I think has a lot to do with my experience. I was, when it was coming out, I was in college and I was too busy drinking.
I got that
out of my system.
Right. So you have you watched the other Star Treks?
In 2011, I moved to Chicago for work. I worked with your friend Karen Kilgariff.
Was that Oprah? Why do I think that was Oprah?
That yeah.
Okay.
That was that Oprah Winfrey cable network thing. Yes. Chip Pope, got to hang out with him. Laura House and I used to play Scrabble all the time. Anyway,
nice.
It was a fun job.
All former. I haven't had Chip Pope on in a long time. So, yeah, he could come back on the Dork Forest again. He's good people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's great. He's hilarious. So I was in Chicago. I kind of knew no one. It was a new job. And all I had in my apartment was an internet connection on a laptop. And I was waiting for the wife and kids to come out. And so I had like 3 months there. And I just was like, oh, crap, all of Star Trek, because all of Star Trek at that time was on Netflix.
That's right. That's right. They dubbed it all on there for like 5 years, I think, right? Netflix. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And so June, July, August of 2011, I watched every single Star Trek episode that existed back to back to back, like in chronological order.
Wait a minute. You spent 3 months watching all of the different series as well, and you finished them all in 3 months?
Ostensibly, I was working, but yeah. Yeah.
Well, that is some epic binging, though, because we're talking Star Trek, the original Trek, and then we're talking Next Trek, Star Trek Next Generation. Oh, right. Did you also do the animated? Yeah, hilarious. Yeah.
I'm a completionist.
Oh, right, right. Who doesn't want to? Yeah. Okay. So you did all the animated nonsense. Was there anything good there? I remember trying to watch it when I was a kid.
There is. Actually, the animated Star Trek, I think, is really interesting for a lot of reasons. They've got some great races that they introduced. They've got a great episode about the devil, and the devil is like just an alien who is on a planet, and he's like, yeah, I'm just the devil. Guess why they hated me? Because I liked exploring and knowledge, right? And, it's amazing. Yeah, I like that episode a lot.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Then, and they actually introduced the idea of the holodeck in the animated series.
Oh, that's an interesting fun fact. Who knew that, right?
Yeah. Well, nerds. Yeah.
Right, right. I'm sure many people knew that. I did not. But here's my thing with Star Trek. I thoroughly enjoyed Star Trek when I was a kid. And then I watched all of Star Trek The Next Generation when I was in college.
Yeah.
And then I watched some of Deep Space Nine. And then I watched all of Voyager. And then I watched, and I've seen the first two seasons of Discovery. And I have not watched the last, and I have seen the first season of Lower Decks. There's four now? Okay. And I have not seen any of Picard.
Okay. And you've missed Prodigy.
And I miss Prodigy, which I didn't even remember. I forgot entirely about Prodigy. Where does that fit into the system?
So Discovery, you mean like timeline wise?
No, I think airing wise.
Okay, so Prodigy is on right now.
Another new one.
Ended. It's another new one. It's another animated. So for the animated series that are current, right? I'm skipping the TOS animated. But okay. Lower Decks is their riff on Orville. It's like a Family Guy animated show.
Yep.
Prodigy is their kids animated show. It is geared towards 5 to 8 year olds, I think.
Okay.
And I'm saying that just because as I watch it, the worst thing about it is all of the Blue's Clues commercials that just air nonstop. It's like Blue's Clues commercial after Blue's Clues commercial.
It will let you know who this is being written for. How is it, Prodigy? Is it pretty good?
I love it. Prodigy, I think, is amazing.
Okay.
Prodigy has great, great Roddenberry themes in it, right? Like, it's got that uplift to it. It's got the like bettering yourselves, self-exploration for the needs of the many outweighing the needs of the few. And occasionally the needs of the one outweighing the needs of the many. That's like, that's all in Prodigy, and it's amazing. It's great. You got Janeway back. You got Chakotay back. You've got a reconstituted Odo and Uhura. Like, very briefly, trailing stuff, but
That's fine. And how many seasons of Prodigy is there? Is there a couple?
So this was the first season.
Okay.
It started airing in the fall, and
it's on Paramount.
I think it was only like 8 episodes. It's on Paramount. Yeah.
And I hear Picard's good.
Picard is interesting. Picard is interesting.
Okay.
So I thought that like season one of Picard started so great. I'll just file a spoiler horn here, right? Like, I'm going to talk.
All of these shows are at least 4 years old.
Picard's only two, but yeah.
Picard's two. Okay. And here's the thing about spoilers is that you can still watch them and you'll just, all it'll be is just I see what he's saying, or I don't see what he's saying, or I like it anyway, and that's okay. Yeah. But I will put in the notes that this is a little spoilery.
Yeah. With Picard, like Star Trek Picard season one would have been a near perfect show if they had let themselves kill Patrick Stewart at the end of it. They fake kill him, and then they, you know, basically triple blood him back, which is like, it was so frustrating because they literally had like the funeral scene where he says goodbye.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, it's beautiful. And then the credits did not roll. And then he was back. And I was like, no.
You came so close. You should have killed him.
Oh, you were so close.
Right.
Should have just let him die.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah. Now let's go back to Enterprise, though, which is 2001, I think, right? When that came out.
Yeah.
2001, 2005.
It started airing. Yeah.
Because I remember seeing it.
It started airing in 2001.
I remember seeing it on the last TV that was deep. Like, I didn't have a flat screen TV. I remember seeing it on a very dense, wide television. And I watched it, and it was kind of Monster of the Week, right? The first season?
So seasons one and two are very Monster of the Week. They try to have a little bit of like an undercurrent storyline about a time war. It is not great, right? Like,
weird.
Issues.
Yeah, that's weird about Star Trek. Sometimes it can take a season or two for them to find their feet, which doesn't feel, it usually only takes like half a season for other shows to really find their feet. But for Star Trek, I remember Next Generation, where I was just like, this
like
is
season three till it got good.
Yeah. I can see that you're trying. So, and I loved it from the get, but that's because I wanted to, you know, I was predisposed to want to love it. So did, so Star yeah. Trek Enterprise had that same issue, or Enterprise as it was called?
Enterprise kind of has that same issue. I think they had two things in there that really are make it difficult for people to watch. And one is that they insist on putting people in their underwear for like entire episodes. Just dudes, ladies in their underwear, and they're
there's
like
a weird sex scene, isn't there, in the first episode?
Oh, there's so many weird sex scenes throughout the run. Yeah. Never with Scott Bakula either, but that's my own.
Right.
Yeah. Oh no, wait, there is one. There is one with Scott Bakula. Never mind.
Okay. But so, just one. And the thing is he, if he's going to be Picard, like if he's going to be Kirk, they're out of stick him in a float tube and spin him around and you know, the elevator. No,
basically half the senior staff on that show you've seen in their underwear, and you've seen them rubbing bio gel on each other to decontaminate. And it's like, oh, come on.
I get it. But, I see what you're doing.
Yeah. And then season three, they tried to process the September 11th terrorist attacks.
God.
Yeah. And what I can tell you is that they handled it in a very, very Star Trek way, which means that by the end, they come to understand why the enemy did what the enemy did, and they make friends with the enemy. And I can tell you that I think in 2003, Americans did not want to hear that. And they didn't want to make friends with the enemy, and they were still quite mad.
Holy smokes. And you watched this in 2011 when you're like,
I watched it in 2011,
which is might have been a great, you're like, if we had handled it in this way. I mean, that's the thing about Star Trek in general is that, and it's so interesting that they wrote it like you know, in 2011, you could look back and go, that's actually not a bad way to deal with it, to actually see why they did it and what was happening with it. But in 2003, for them to have written it like that, it takes an incredible amount of sort of that Gene Roddenberry flavor to it, with that humanity overcoming. Wow. Yeah. So that's season three.
So season three did that. And then season four is where most people who have been willing to sit and watch Enterprise in its entirety will say, hey, season four is where it starts to get good. Season four is where they start to bridge the gap. And it is very Roddenberry. They bridge the gap from sort of to talk Star Trek nerdiness, right? They really start to bridge the gap between First Contact and the Federation and the founding of the Federation. And like the end of season four, you're seeing like Archer speak at the start of talks that become the Federation. And it's great.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's the founding of the Federation is the fourth season, kind of. So does he spend a lot of time on Earth in Newtown, San Francisco?
He spends a fair amount of time, I think, bouncing around Earth's solar system in season four, because that's the other thing. The big bad in season four is Earthlings who don't want to merge with aliens because the terrorist attack got us, you know, like the aliens attacked us. They were the terrorists. Sure, we're friends with them now, but we still don't like them and we can't trust them.
Right. So it's sort of a Watchmen kind of thing, which joins the Earth together, and then it turns out there are still racists and horrible people. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So here's, now we go back to the very beginning of Enterprise. Yeah. There's a dog. Why is there a dog?
So there's a dog because I think, I don't know why. I mean, it's fun that there's dog, right?
Is like, there? Yeah, it's cool that there's a dog. Yeah.
And it is a little silly, but then it also gives us the great joke in Star Trek 2009, where Scotty is like, oh, yeah, I practiced beaming with Admiral Archer's prized beagle, and I'll let you know when the beagle turns up. And like, so yeah, that's why that's there.
Oh,
yeah.
That's why they put the dog in. So there could be one joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's awesome.
On. That's the slogan. Yeah.
Okay. So who's on staff? I only know Scott Bakula. He's the only one. And is there?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to take a quick second to plug this amazing podcast that's out right now called Shuttlepod One, which is also the name of a great episode title from Enterprise.
Okay.
And, Shuttlepod One has Connor Trinneer, who played the engineer, Trip Tucker. So he was the engineer. He now has a podcast with Dominic Keating, who was the security officer, where
they
talk about Star Trek Enterprise.
Two of the actors who were on the show have a podcast about that show they did 20 years ago. Oh, that's awesome.
And it is amazing.
Okay.
It is amazing. I highly recommend everyone listen to Shuttlepod One as well.
Okay.
As the Dork Forest and the Jackie and Laurie show. But anyway.
thank you.
And let's see what's out there. Let's see what's out there.
Don't forget, let's see what's out there. I'm with Pete Bellet, everybody. Okay, go.
Yeah. So Connor Trinneer is the engineer. He plays Trip Tucker. He is the Southern good old boy engineer who loves engineering and engineering stuff. You've got Dominic Keating, who plays the British security officer whose entire family is in the Navy, and he is ostracized for joining Starfleet.
Okay.
You have Jolene Blaylock playing the Vulcan science officer.
Okay.
She is on the crew of humans only because the Vulcans don't trust humans.
Okay.
It's great.
She's just there sort of as a safety valve in case they got to pull the plug, if I remember correctly, on humans, right?
Yeah.
They're just like,
exactly
they could they could go batshit. We might have to get in here and and shut them down because they may not be ready for this.
Yeah. You got Linda Park, who plays Hoshi Sato. Linda Park is the communications officer.
Okay.
And her superpower is that in three sentences, she can speak your language. It is ridiculous. But Hoshi Sato.
You need one.
Is the one who invented the universal translator.
But okay.
But literally, it's like, we're getting this strange alien message. We don't know what it means. There's no universal translator because it's pre-Star Trek, whatever. Pre-Enterprise. Pre-Starfleet. Nope, that's still wrong. Pre-Federation.
Okay.
That's the right words. And she literally, it's like, they're broadcasting something weird. What is it? What is it? I need more nouns. I need more verbs. They're saying we hate you. Okay. she just gets it like that. It's amazing.
Oh my God. I need to actually just see that episode, quite honestly, just offhand.
Okay. So there is an episode where, they meet the Romulans.
Okay.
And, every once in a while, I'll just wake up in a dead sweat because I'll be like, how did that work? Because they're like, a mine hits the ship, blows up. Oh, it's terrible. And then they're like, what's this message coming in? And she's like, it's just on repeat. It's a message from something called the Romulans. And then the T'Pol, the Jolene Blaylock, the Vulcan, says it's pronounced Romulan. And I'm like, wait a second, it's an audio message.
Yes,
he should have known how to say.
Oh my God! Oh, that's hilarious.
That wouldn't have changed anyway.
That is hilarious.
Yeah.
And only caught by nerds. Much like, if I might digress briefly, the Morbius trailer for Morbius, that he keeps saying, the trailer is, Morbius is, of course, some sort of vampire-y superhero, or supervillain, between the two. And and it's a Sony guy. And he has what he keeps, initially, the first trailer said that he had sonar. The subsequent trailers, he keeps saying, I have some sort of bat radar. I want to stab them with a pen. Nerds, no sonar. Nerds, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Bat radar, that's fun. Sonar, you doof. What are you doing? Oh, that's my God. Amazing. That's amazing. Oh, every time I hear bat radar, I just want to just throw my telephone. Anyway.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wait, I got two more to do in the main cast.
Please.
Okay. John Billingsley, amazing character actor, John Billingsley, plays the alien doctor on the ship. And his whole gimmick is that he doesn't use machines. He uses animals whenever possible. So it's like, you have a wound, put this slug on it. It'll seal the wound, right?
Okay.
Oh, you have a headache? You've got blood worms? Let the leeches suck it out of your blood. It's nuts. Anyway.
Oh, that is nuts.
And then, yeah.
How does he interact with the dog? Oh, and he doesn't sleep.
He doesn't sleep. He only sleeps 6 days out of the year.
God, of course he does.
Actually, the dog almost dies on a couple of occasions. Yeah.
Oh.
And
no dogs are killed.
Fox has to save the dog.
Yeah.
More times than you would care for it.
Homeward bound, you guys. He's Shadow's coming over the hill. Shadow's coming over the hill. It's okay, you guys.
He's coming back. Mm-hmm. And then Anthony Montgomery plays Travis Mayweather, pilot, right, for the ship.
Okay.
And his deal is that his family is the space equivalent of long haul truckers, because at warp one or warp two, it takes 6-7 years to get outside the galaxy, right?
Yep.
But trade still has to happen. So these guys are like born and raised on these ships.
Okay.
Anthony Montgomery leaves that family life
to join Starfleet. And so he's there. Yeah. He's just the pilot, right? Like there's no, it's Star Trek piloting, right? There's no interface with the computer. There's no headset kind of interface. It's literally
hands on. Yeah.
Hands on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Any children?
He has this great scene.
Let's hear the great scene.
No kids. He's got a great scene where he has to figure out how to pilot a alien spaceship that's designed for insectoids with like 8 arms.
That sounds like an excellent episode. Little twister, little bringing Twister into the mix. And so no children.
I said no kids, except Connor Trinneer, over the course of 4 seasons, does father 2 children with aliens. Like I said, there's a lot of time in his underwear. And neither of those children definitely get the Alex treatment from Star Trek Next Generation, you know, Worf's kid.
Okay.
Where it's like, this is my child. No mention for the rest of the series.
Right.
We've got an episode. Remember the child.
Remember the child.
Yeah.
He's in the nursery. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, one of those kids you never see again.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, because the other alien
gets custody.
That's the alien race where the men bear the child. So Connor Trinneer, the human man, gets pregnant with an alien fetus, gives birth to it, and then the other alien is like, "Oh, well, that's mine now. Thank you. Goodbye," and goes away. And then,
do we learn about sexism? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of you see, Timmy, sexism is bad. But they say that while they put all of the women in skimpy underwear. And so it's like, it's a little bit, difficult to really pick up that message.
Right. Roddenberry and his pointy bras he's trying, but he's trying from a weird place. So, it's fine. I mean, everyone doesn't want to see good looking people in their underpants.
Exactly.
And the men are also in their underpants too, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, the Trip Tucker, the engineer,
has
more time in his underwear than in his outfit, I'd say.
In his uniform.
Because so after the terrorist attacks, he has trouble sleeping because his sister died in the terrorist attacks.
Oh, shit.
And so then Jolene, the T'Pol, the Vulcan, has to help him sleep with Vulcan neuropressure, which
okay.
is just massage.
Yeah.
And so after that point, they are just in their underwear massaging each other during staff meetings, like just anytime you need.
Oh my God. Yeah. Staff meetings. any discussion of STDs? Any talk?
STD discussion. Oh, okay. Oh my gosh. Yes, there is. There's an entire STD arc. Yeah.
Season?
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Vulcan.
Oh,
season two, I think.
Makes
Might
sense.
Be season three, but I think it's season two. The one thing that Enterprise did really well was fleshing out Vulcan backstory, right? So like we have this, like the Vulcan that we know from TOS in the past and everything after TOS up to Enterprise is you know, pure logic, very reserved, right? Very sort of low, reserved. That's the word.
Right. And Ponfar every 7 years.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ponfar every 7 years, which gets a little crazy, but, you know, they don't like to talk about it. Enterprise is like, no. Vulcans. And oh, that's the other thing is like every once in a while, you know, Trek will be like, well, look, Vulcans have emotions, right, that are much more powerful than humans, but they've learned how to control them. In Enterprise, Vulcans have not really learned how to control them. And so, like, they show you, like, oh, we've learned how to control this. We're pure logic and reason. But then they do things that they're like, well, yes, but everyone knows Andorians are bastards and need to die. And it's like, oh, right?
But,
and so then
it's 100 years before Spock, right? Is it 100 years before Spock?
It's like 100 years before Spock, although T'Pring from the Ponfar episode of TOS is a character in Enterprise as well.
Oh, weird.
Am I saying that wrong? Maybe it's not T'Pring.
Like the guy from Shawshank Redemption, which I think was Dufresne.
That was Dufresne. No, it is T'Pring. Never mind.
Oh, good for you.
Maybe I'm right. Nope, it wasn't T'Pring. T'Pring was his wife. Oh, dang it. Okay, sorry. Well, I'm not going to look it up. Sorry. But
don't worry about it. But that guy.
The other Vulcan. T'Pau. T'Pau. There we go. Okay, never mind. So they've got that. They also, like, in Enterprise, Vulcan mind melding is something that only perverts do. And so normal Vulcans look down on it.
Okay.
And then there is a rare disease that can be spread by mind melding. And the Vulcan crew member in Enterprise, T'Pol, has someone force a mind meld on her.
Right.
And she didn't want it. And then she gets the illness. And then is ostracized by her
people?
The Vulcan High Command.
Oh, yeah. But it's like being blamed for being raped. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. 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 It's actually, I don't know, you know, it's one of those episodes where they take what's happening and they break it down into sci-fi, and then you get to think about it in different terms.
Yeah, it's outstanding. Yeah. Those are all really good. And it's interesting because it makes sense, because I remember when Spock was reluctant to mind meld. He's like, it's incredibly personal. You don't want to do it. I don't want to do it with you guys. Okay, I guess I'll do it. Right? I mean, there was definitely that arc every time Spock used a Vulcan mind meld. And and then it became kind of a father to son kind of thing. Like remember in the movie where him and Bones did it? Like he dumped it in, he dumped himself into Bones.
Yeah, you remember. Yeah,
yeah.
Where he puts his Katra into Bones so that then he can come back alive. They do something similar in Enterprise. In Enterprise, they find a Katra and people are like, well, Katras don't exist. And then it's like, no, they do. And they bring back this ancient Vulcan philosopher and it helps Vulcans advance again, and you see that in Enterprise. And they've got this great line in Enterprise, which is like, the reason that the Vulcans are so afraid of humans is because Vulcans have been struggling with bettering themselves for thousands of years, and they've still not got it right. Whereas humans, in 100 years, go from, I don't know, timeline gets a little screwy here depending on what Star Trek you're talking about.
Sure.
But like, basically, supposedly in 1999, we have the, the eugenics wars, which is where Khan, Noonien, and Singh comes up, right? And then by 2063, you've got First Contact.
Okay.
2062, whatever it is. And so it's like 100 years from World War III to progress. And,
right.
And so that's why the Vulcans are like, hey, humans, you're not ready for spaceflight. You're not ready for warp 5.
It took us so long. Yeah.
It took us so long.
Yeah. Did the humans invent warp 5, or was it given to them by and sort of fired off First Contact because of warp 5?
So as I remember, and again, I might be wrong, right? So like dorks out there, I know.
Yeah. If someone's got more info, post it in the chat. Post it in the notes.
Happy to talk Star Trek anytime. But
the
humans actually developed the Warp 5 engine that is on the Enterprise.
Okay.
But they think developed it a lot faster if the Vulcans hadn't been holding them back. Right? Vulcans have been like, no, you're not ready for this, right? Don't look this way, right? They make the humans go the
look
long
over
way
there.
Around.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. so they delay it by maybe 20, 30 years or something. Is that about right? Along those lines?
Archer's big anger point is that his dad, who was a contemporary of Zefram Cochran, wasn't alive to see a Warp 5 engine. And he thinks that, his dad should have been able to see it. His dad should have been able to do that sort of thing, but the Vulcans held them back.
Oh, so he's got a bit of a grudge against Vulcans? What's his vibe? What's Scott Bakula's vibe?
I mean, in a lot of ways, Scott Bakula's vibe is Scott Bakula, right?
Right. Scott Bakula plays Scott Bakula.
Right. Like, and there's so much, I mean, at least for me, right? There is like so much Quantum Leap ingrained in my face.
Yeah.
That when I see that face, I can't help but think, oh crap, where's Ziggy? Right. And actually, Al guest stars in season 1.
That is just pandering, but is it amazing? It's amazing.
Yeah. I loved it. Al plays a bad guy, kind of.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
And I forgot that guy's name. He just passed away too. Was it Dean Stanton?
Yeah, no. It was Dean Stanton.
Dean Stockton.
Stockton. Okay. Yeah, Dean Stanton also just passed away too. I don't know. I think a lot of deans just died.
Rough day for the deans. So Archer's vibe is that he grew up with Zefram Cochran as like his uncle.
Okay.
Zefram Cochran, the guy who invented warp, right?
Yep.
Played by that tall drink of water in the movies.
Right, that guy. I remember that guy. I can't remember. Yeah.
No idea what his name is. I do know he's a vegetarian.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so he was like Archer's uncle. And
James
Archer
Cromwell.
Lived... That's it.
James Cromwell. There we
James
go.
James Cromwell is Zefram Cochran in the movies, but not in TOS. In TOS, it's played by somebody else.
Okay.
And actually in Enterprise, also played by him, but they just used old shots from the movie. They never actually got him back in.
Oh, that's awesome. So he just got a check. Good for him.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was like Archer's uncle, and Archer's dad was like his right hand and helped him out. And Archer then watched his dad sort of get held back by the Vulcans, was their impression.
Right.
And so he's got a chip on his shoulder that he wants to carry on his dad's work, right? Propel humanity into the warp age. Vulcans are holding him back. Yeah.
Okay. So does that resentment show up with the Vulcan woman on the ship?
Yes, in about, you know, 2.5 episodes, it shows up. And then they get over it real quick. He also, he loves water polo.
Oh, interesting.
He loves, he loves his dog.
Okay. And, that's why he brought the dog.
That's why he brought the dog. And he likes to camp and hike. And they sort of mess around with, like, trying to have the Vulcan be his love interest for, like, a couple of episodes.
Right.
And then they're like, nah, I don't know, it doesn't quite work. And so then they made the Vulcan and the engineer love interest with, like, a lot of will they, won't they, until they have a kid in season 4. And then, and so that's, like, Archer, I think, has, like, one or two, like, romantic interludes, but then they always turn out really bad. And the you know, the aliens who seduced him were doing it to get something out of
right there's always they were just inextricably drawn to him in the way that
it was actually ulterior motives
okay, and that is very interesting. Okay, so what are your favorite episodes? Do you have favorite episodes from each season, or is it mostly just you like season 4 the best?
No, I like season 3 the best.
Okay.
I like the terrorist.
The 9/11
plot. It's called the Zindi plot.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the Zindi. The Zindi are actually really interesting. It's the Zindi were a planet where 5 races achieve sentience at about the same time.
Yeah.
So you've got humanoids, primates who, you know, are like Planet of the Apes people, insectoids that are all CG insect like crickets. You've got reptilians who are like big angry lizards. And then you've got the aquatics that are whales with thumbs.
And
live in the water. And then you've also got the avians. Now, the avians died out before the show, so you only ever see, I think, a skull of an avian. But the avians dying out led the Zindi to believe that they needed to come together as a planet, all 4 races, and work together. And then people from the future come and tell the Zindi that the race that's going to destroy all of the Zindi races are called the humans, and they live on planet Earth, and go get them. And that's what happens.
That's season 3.
So the Zindi, that's season 3. So season 2 ends.
Yeah.
I think I've got this right. The very last shot of season 2 is a laser beam cutting a swath of Earth from Florida to Venezuela and just obliterating it. And then the Enterprise is like, we got to go back to Earth. And they go back to Earth. And then season 3 starts where they're like, yes, we found this creature in this thing. We think this was a test run. Why you would do a test run on your actual target, I have no idea.
Right.
And then they go and they're like, okay, so we need to find the Zindi. The Zindi live in this area of space that no one can really explore because it's got these, you watch Deep Space Nine a little bit or no?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah.
It's like the Badlands, but worse.
Okay.
And so then that's where they live. And so then all of season 3 is Enterprise bouncing around the expanse is what it's called.
Trying to get in.
Find the Zindi.
Yeah. Just sort of doing an end
they
around.
They get in.
They get in.
They get in, but then they have to find the Zindi. So they have to work with all these new people and cultures, and yet somehow they still keep bumping into Vulcans. It's weird, but they get there, and the whole thing is that the expanse is actually the way it is because this other alien race from a different dimension are trying to convert the expanse into real estate that they can live in. And so they know that if the humans succeed with the Federation, they will fight them. And so they're trying to get rid of the humans before they.
Interesting.
And then,
okay. Ta-da. That is fascinating. Yeah. So Right. So that's season three. That's this whole try to figure out and why they did it. And
yeah. And so I really love season three. I think that it's, interesting because like Roddenberry never wanted to have stories about individual characters and like their growth. He always wanted it to be that the humans are perfect, right? Which we're seeing in the Federation is perfection. And they go around and fix other people's problems. Imagine that, right? A white man in the 50s trying to tell everyone how to fix their problems.
Oh my God. It's that Manifest Destiny. He literally, Gene Roddenberry had internalized Manifest Destiny. But then he got writers who were like, we aren't perfect.
Yeah, DC Fontana, right? Anyway, it was great. I'm forgetting so many names here, but
no worries. Everybody else is yelling.
And
it's
then,
fine.
Yeah. Then in like Next Generation, Berman, Piller, I don't know, Jerry Ryan, lots of people. Braga, right?
Yep.
All these people are like, look, we can tell great stories about, you know, character development, right? You got to see Worf really develop and deal with his family and stuff like that. And then in Deep Space Nine, like they sort of took that and were like, okay, great. And what if we made it like stretch over multiple, like an entire season, five seasons of the Bajoran War, right? Or the, you know, the war with the Founders and the Alpha Quadrant and Gamma Quadrant going at each other. But then I still feel like in Deep Space Nine especially, they would go at it and then they would just drop it and then they would come back and be like, all right, no, this thing, right? Star Trek Enterprise Season 3, episode to episode, some of them, granted, like very slightly, but each one tries to progress the main storyline little by little.
Okay.
And it takes turns and it's not like A block plus B block equals C, right? They do different things. They explore different things inside of there. And not only do they like develop personal stories, right? With Trip dealing with his sister's death, to Paul and Trip, you know, like sort of becoming a couple. But then you also deal with like Archer, the admiral, who like set out with these very lofty goals, then being like, oh crap, I've got to sacrifice part of me and my morals to achieve a greater goal. And so like I know that Voyager did that a little bit, and I know that Deep Space Nine did it in like one episode, couple episodes, whatever. But I always like those episodes in Deep Space Nine and Voyager always felt to me like it was coming out of left field, right?
Okay.
And like it's there's this other great podcast called Mission Log where they're watching every episode of Star Trek in chronological order and talking about it.
Yep.
And Gene Roddenberry's son is the executive producer of that podcast.
Wow.
They talk about like their problem is when characters are gumbied, right? Which means they just bend them in any which way they want, right?
Yeah.
And that's like how I feel it's been handled in other Star Treks when a character has to go against their morals. It's like, well, we're going to bend them this way for this episode. Next week, he's going to be back to what you know. Don't worry.
They don't do that in Enterprise. He keeps the flaw.
I mean, he doesn't keep making mistakes, but I think that like with Archer, you see him haunted more as that season goes on.
Okay.
And like he deals with it more and more. And like the first time he puts someone in an airlock and threatens to blast them out of the airlock.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, oh, that was weird, right? But then like by the end of the episode, when he's like ready to kill an innocent child, you're like, oh, he deals with it for a scene, you know?
Yeah.
And you're like, so for me, I was like, I saw the progression.
Okay.
And I got it. I don't know that it works for everyone, but I think that they dealt with it much better than.
That's fascinating. And right. Sort of the way that the psychology of being in that position actually would affect you. And they write it into the show, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so yeah. what about season four? It's the last season. Do they know it's the last season going in? Or do they just have to end it?
I don't think they did.
Okay.
I think that they weren't, when they started the season, they weren't expecting it to be the last season. I've read interviews and stuff that say that they were planning out other future arcs.
Right.
They did do a big shift in the executive side of the show into season four. And so they brought in this guy called Manny Coto. And they're like, oh, Manny Coto's turned the show around. But then Enterprise has the worst ending of any Star Trek.
Oh, really?
That I know of.
Okay. Because yeah. It just had to end too quick and they couldn't plan for it or there was some trouble. What was it? What was it?
The very last episode of Star Trek Enterprise is akin to a Newhart episode. Like the end of Newhart.
Oh,
where
they're
like,
shit.
It was all a dream. The very last episode of Enterprise is actually a continuation of a Star Trek The Next Generation episode.
Right.
Where then you discover that what you're watching is Riker hollow playing being a member of the Enterprise and XO1.
Wow. Wait, I think I vaguely heard about that. And it does seem lame. And
it doesn't land well. They kill off a major character.
Right.
And then they're just sort of like, the end?
The end?
And,
question mark.
Yeah. And like, honestly, the end is like, it's like, and they got to Earth and formed the Federation.
Oh, my God. How was the second to last? Can you remember the second to last episode? Was it, did it have any kind of potential?
So everyone really loves two episodes from season four.
Okay.
That were near the end, but I hate them. And
they were not your favorites. Okay.
I viscerally hate mirror universe episodes.
Oh, and, well, then you must not have enjoyed another version of Star Trek. Mirror universe with people with goatees, not your idea of a good time? Okay.
Yeah, so in TOS, the first time they do it, I'm like, fine, right? I get what you're trying to do. That was a very poignant message. Thank you very much. Goodbye. And then
leave your card at the door. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, so I won't call. Deep Space Nine then was like, we got to fill some episodes. You know what's fun? Letting people put on goatees. Go get them, boys. Right. And then it's like, hang on a second. Can we just for 1 minute think this through logically? Why would the Terran Empire be at Bajor with a Bajoran, a human? Klingon, right? Although the first
Romulan
one was before
Worf
joined, whatever, right? And like it's like they have to cram it in so hard with crowbars to make it work. I was like, please stop. And then they're like, nope, let's do this like five more times in DS9. And I was like, please, for the love of God, never do this again. But they kept doing it. And then everyone loves two episodes at the very end of season four of Enterprise where they did the mirror universe, but it was
the
start of the mirror universe.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a two-parter.
Okay.
And it also ties into an old TOS episode with like some time travel stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that one, I think they actually go on Kirk's Enterprise and it's like CGI, but they're mirror universe and,
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Some people love it. I like Mirror Universe makes my skin crawl.
Okay.
It just makes me so nerd angry.
Right. Because it's not a device that you're like, okay. I have that same problem sometimes with time machines and immortality.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Time machines and immortality will sometimes, weirdly enough, just make me react in a way I'm like, nope. I want no part of whatever's happening here. So,
yeah.
But... So we're almost at an hour here, my friend. So what about, right? And so what about, so I am, by the way, talking to Pete Malay, and he has a podcast called Let's See What's Out There, LSWOT Cast is the acronym handle on Instagram and Twitter and all the things. So, but what, is there anything that you would have, like, did you write any kind of a one shot in your head? Was there anything that you were like, if there could be more, like if you were going to play imagination and end up on the Enterprise, was there anything that you would have wanted to have an interaction with these guys and just go, come on, Archer, let's go get them. And like, would you, I love it.
Well,
I
mean, Enterprise did sort of everything, right? Which is another reason that people hate it. They think it broke the timeline and like messed stuff up all over the place. And I really firmly disagree with that one because like, you know, they say like, well, we didn't meet Romulans until Kirk. And it's like, yep, in Enterprise, they didn't actually meet the Romulans. They just heard about them.
Yeah.
Right. Like there was no meeting really. So that works. They have Ferengis show up in Enterprise. And it's like, wait a second, we didn't know about Ferengis. And it's like, yes, but the way the Ferengis show up is they put everyone to sleep and rob the ship and then disappear, right? So like,
okay,
nobody really knew what they were there. It works. They've got the Borg in Enterprise, and everyone's like, how could you have the Borg in Enterprise when the Borg didn't show up till Next Generation? And you have to go, well, hold on a second. In First Contact, the Borg traveled back in time. And so, yes, there were Borg on Earth at the time of Enterprise. Because of the movie First Contact. So I think that they did it really well. One of my favorite arcs is they show you Brent Spiner playing Soong's ancestor, who is all into genetic engineering.
Okay.
And I love it. And then at the end of that arc, like, you know, Archer convinces Soong to get out of the genetic engineering business because genetic engineering is bad. And Soong's like, you're right. Maybe the answer's in robotics. And it's like, yeah, right? Look at that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah. So you got to be a fly on the wall. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. They also explain the difference between TOS Klingons and Next Generation and Future Klingons.
Yeah.
Through genetic engineering is like what that ridge thing is all about, and I'm like, yeah, all for it, that works for me.
Yep.
And so honestly, like, I really think that the writers what I feel like is, in Enterprise, the writers for the Enterprise really had a deep love for Star Trek that came before,
okay,
and then tried to tell new stories in that same vein,
right?
And so it clicks for me on every step. Yeah.
That has to be where we ended, Pete Malay. I have to tell you that
that's been my TED talk. Yeah.
That has been your convincing me to at least try to see a couple of episodes. And I want to watch Prodigy is what I want to watch. Cause I'll sit through
it's
a Blue's Clue.
It's like,
yeah, they're 22, 15 minute eps. Awesome. Cause I like Lower Decks, but it's a little snarky for me. And I think I might like Prodigy even better. So
Lower Decks drives me bananas because they do so many things where I'm like, that would not be allowed in the Federation.
Right. And I want. Yeah.
Then they've got like three great jokes in each episode where I'm like, damn it. Those are great jokes.
I got to stay.
Why isn't the whole episode that great joke?
Right.
Instead, you're doing this other stupid stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wanted them to stay more in the Lower Decks, too. I really did. I didn't want them to go to planets and start being like away teams. But whatever. It's,
it should have been Redshirts, the cartoon. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But all good. Pete Malay, you've done vital work by being on the Dork Forest. Everybody, go find his podcast, which is called Let's See What's Out There, LSWOT Cast. And it'll be in the notes. And this has been an episode of the Dork Forest. You know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?